Welcome to Conscious Communication, the podcast that can help you improve your company's culture and better your team's communication, helping you build more significant relationships. Now here's your host, Philip Bogolub.
I have the privilege and honor of talking with Maddie Stout. Maddie is a podcasting pioneer. After 15 years, he left a successful radio career to join the founding team of Stitcher. He has helped develop close to 400 shows, that's a lot, and was the first vice president of podcasting at iHeartRadio. I don't know if we're going to have time to talk about all this stuff, but he is an educator also in media at the Academy of Art University and West Virginia University and founder of Jam Street Media. I'm now exhausted. I got to take a nap because that was a lot of stuff to go through. Excuse me.
I can't wait to hear from me now. What a great setup. Thanks.
So welcome to the show. Thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Oh, anytime. Thank you.
So the first question I want to ask you, I could go over these questions pretty easily and quickly, but I want to know, what was the serendipity? What was the accident? What was that coincidence that guided you in this direction? Not necessarily where you exactly are at now, but where you kind of said, okay, I'm going down this road, not down that road. Oh, look at that door open. Oh, look at that door. What happened?
Oh, wow. There's a lot
for me. Pick the first one that comes to your mind.
Well, you know, when I started, okay, I'll tell you one. So I started radio in West Virginia when I was a kid. I was 16. I wanted to be on radio since I was 10. I started doing radio shows in my bedroom and I loved Dr. Demento and like,
oh, wow.
And things like that. And I was on the AM station and then I got promoted to Sunday nights when I was 17 and I got to play Dr. Demento every week. So it was like,
oh, cool.
I really made through college and then was worked at a radio station in college because the college radio station in West Virginia wouldn't hire me, but the big rock station for some reason did, and I ended up doing that through college. But I ended up at a country station in Parkersburg, West Virginia. I was running like three stations. I was only like 24 at the time, and I just wanted to get out. I was like, my dream was to be on the air in Pittsburgh or maybe DC. And I sent an intern to Washington. She was going to Washington for the summer. I said, you should try to intern with the Don and Mike show. I loved them at the time. They were just doing something different. It was one of the first FM talk shows. I just thought they were great. And then that station was the first FM talk station in the country. It had Howard Stern on in the morning and then G. Gordon Liddy and then Don and Mike. So she gets there and she calls me and says, hey, you know, I know you're trying to get out of there. The executive producer for the G. Gordon Liddy show is leaving. So I got him a little Ford Escort. I drove to D.C. I had never EP'd a talk show. I had no business EP'ing a talk show with 400 affiliates either.
Oh, wow.
But I knew how to do everything in radio, and they loved that. They also loved that I would take a pay cut, mind you, from West Virginia to come to D.C., and I ended up producing that show. I talked back to Gordon Liddy all the time. I was the only person that did it. He loved me. CBS loved me because of that. Thought, you know, saw that I was a good talent manager. And next thing I know, I'm in New York City doing mornings, like WNEW. So I went from West Virginia. Within a year, I was in New York City doing mornings. So that was serendipitous. And meeting my mentor, Jeremy Coleman, who had started the FM talk in DC and then moved it to New York. He is still my mentor. He is the president of the Howard Stern Network. He runs Howard. He's Guy Howard listens to. And he's still my mentor. We've been talking once a month for 15, 20 years.
Wow. Wow. That's a very cool story. Dr. Demento. I used to love Dr. Demento. He was on late Sunday nights, right?
Sunday nights, 11 o'clock most places. And
Wow.
They came in on album and I got to keep them afterwards because like nobody else wanted them. So I like,
really?
Oh yeah. I've got them somewhere stored, but I was a nerd.
I understand.
What kid listens to Weird Al, you know, instead of Duran Duran? That was me.
I was listening to that too. So it was a mixture because especially when Weird Al came out with the videos, like, you know, whatever the Michael Jackson song, I can't remember that one.
Eat It.
Eat It, I think it was. I'm like, I love that stuff. He's still around for crying out loud.
I got his first album. Like because I listened to Dr. D and he played it and I really got into it. And, yeah, it was it. So I started doing parodies in my room and it, you know, worked out because I ended up after Liddy being on entertainment shows and sports talk and comedy. And then I got to write comedy and then I got to do that there and in San Francisco. And,
oh, wow.
and saw the writing on the wall 16 years ago and said, you know, this is not going to be around much longer, what I'm doing, which is the kind of talk that we did, which was, you know, very much Howard Stern talk.
Right.
Everything is on the air. Everything is on the air.
Right.
Do not say anything in this building that you do not want on the air, that kind of bug.
Right.
And it was going away. And I saw Stitcher as a chance for me to learn how to be at a startup and work with these guys who would come from like MIT and Harvard. And, you know, I'm just this poor kid from West Virginia, grew up in a trailer park. I don't know anything about business, but I know everything about content. So I was the first director of content, and none of us made any money from the first iteration of Stitcher, but it did sell later for $300 million, and I'm not bitter at all.
Well, you know, in this conscious community that I've created for this podcast and the people that are listening, it's about following your soul knowledge, following your what I call in the philosophy that I've created called Arjanoi, which is your soul knowledge. And you followed your serendipities. You followed your gut. You followed what you knew was going to make you happy. And then you're doing it for a living.
And I have my whole life. And, you know, I have to remind myself that sometimes, you know, I had a boss once. I was worked up about something and he said, listen, if the world was a mall, we work at the... Can I curse?
You should go ahead.
He said, this is the fucking toy store. Work in the toy store, okay? So just relax. And I always remind myself that. I work at the toy store, so don't take it too seriously. That's served me well. And it's advice I give, you know, my students, you know, when they're freaking out about something. Like, you know, I'm like, nobody dies. It's just a podcast.
Right.
You know, like, it's okay.
So I was an engineer in the medical field. And I don't know if you know what an x-ray tube is, but it's a medical device that creates the radiation that gives you the images for like CT scanners and stuff. That was serious stuff. When I got a call and I had to go out on a call, I traveled all over the place, including around the globe. And several times in the United States, I had to go overnight. Not all the time, but that was a major thing. Podcasting? My wife's an actuary. And when we got married, she goes, said, I don't think I'm going to be on 24-hour call. I'm thinking anybody's going to have a 24-hour, 24/7 call on a pension plan. So I'm like, it's like, yeah, you're right. So you're right. You want to enjoy it, but you also have pride in it, you know, and you want things to be, right before I hit record, he wanted everything in the background to look that. But there's nothing wrong with that. I have that with my recording studio back here, and people are always making comments about it. And it's I'm proud of it and what I do for myself. So you want to do that in the right way. So I can understand with people taking it personally, but you're absolutely, it's a podcast or it's this or that, or it's a comedy show or whatever. It's, you know, if you can help somebody or make a difference and entertain people, that's the best thing in the world. So one of the things I want to talk to them about.
Art is personal, by the way. Like, so I get when, you know, it is personal because when I create art, it's me. And podcasting is art. It is an art. And I take it very seriously because it's my art. It's what I focus on. So yeah, I do take it personally when I shouldn't.
And well, yeah, but to your point, it's only a podcast, but you want the best content. You want the best look. You want the best sound. Do people make mistakes? Yeah, but some of the mistakes are, so the Johnny Carson show, those of the listeners that don't remember him, he was pretty much one of the pioneers for being a pioneer in the talk show industry. And one of the things he was known for was he was recorded live. There was no editing. And what was great about it is because you saw all the mistakes. And the mistakes were the fun part. Now, I'm not talking blatant stuff or something's out of place, but just, you know, flubs or mess ups or whatever. And he kept it in because those are the things that were hysterical. And you want to keep that in because you want to be genuine. You don't want to, you know, people can sense that when you're not genuine. So one of the things I wanted to talk about, among several, was about your three E's: empathy, education, and entertainment. Can you kind of go over that? I like those three.
Yeah, it's my philosophy on podcasting. Every podcast should have those three E's. One, a podcast should feel like you're hanging out with people. You know, I made the difference between when I was a DJ and when I got into doing FM talk was that as a DJ, I did learn early when I messed up, I would tell the listeners what happened. Oh man, the CD player is that. And my boss came in and he said, that's why people like you right there. So I got to do that for this other thing. And so empathy is big. I got to feel like I'm connected to you when we're hanging out. Every podcast teaches us something. I don't care if you're listening to two drunk guys in the garage talking about the Jets. You're going to learn something. And then the last one's entertainment. You know, the thing that I find a lot of podcasters, especially, you know, hobbyists and folks that are new at it, they forget there's an audience. And you're there to entertain them. You need to know who they are, and you need to know what they like and what they don't like. You know, you cracking yourself up all day is not entertaining Bob, who is your just target demo.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, so you've got to, you know, that's why I'm very picky about, you know, I've been called a sound snob, and you got a little taste of it at the beginning. I shunned you for you. I was like, why are you using this? Why you could use this other thing that sounds so much better? But because it's really important to me, because for me, a podcast should take me somewhere. I've always been very, you know, like most creatives, I have an overactive brain. I don't know how to shut it off. I used to shut it off drinking and drugging in any way I could. And when I read a book, that would be when I could calm down, like, because I got somewhere. And podcasting should do that for, at least my feeling is, I should be able to put on headphones and not have to think about anything else but the podcast and go somewhere and be there and out of my own shit for a little bit.
Well, we're having a cup of coffee at a restaurant in the morning. We're having some breakfast together. A lot of times when we have some time, but we don't have more time. Maybe we'll come back and talk some other time in the future. But I like just keep going on and on. I forget I'm even on the air. I forget I'm even doing this. And I'm like, oh, wait, it's coming to the end of everything. And this is great because it is an exchange. And I don't learn from talking. I learn from listening. And I like making the mistakes. I like making the flubs. I make, because it's human. You know, you can really clean things up to make look things real pretty. I mean, the audio and all that. I mean, you know all that stuff. But for the audience, you want to make things sound good. You don't want to have, you know, peas or this or some of these other stuff going through the mic, but things happen. So I think it's more being genuine and honest. And like you said, the empathy, education, and entertainment, you're going to get something out of it, whether it's something that you're saying or I'm saying or something going, oh, I didn't think of it that way, either consciously or unconsciously, and picking that up. Now, you were mentioning about sobriety, and I wanted to know how that's influenced your ability to relate to people and be empathetic, because when you go through things, and you hear other people, you know, because everybody says, oh, you're an overnight sensation. Yeah, it took you 20 years. But, you know, we go through stuff, whether it's a divorce, whether it's through drugs, it doesn't matter. And that kind of, for me, makes me more aware that I'm just human and I'm also not the only one, which makes me feel not alone. So how does that sobriety and that stuff to that point got you to where that's helped you in your life?
The final stages of alcoholism for a lot of folks is complete isolation. So, you know, drinking was a big part of who I was. I was a paid spokesperson for Coors for 6 years. I got paid $1,000 a weekend to go to bar and drink and talk to people and go on stage and make them laugh. I mean, I could not imagine life without drink culture. Like all my world revolved around it. And then, you know, when I got off the radio and started working at a regular company and had, I could work from home a couple of days, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, I can drink a little more. And it was, you know, it started to get to be, you know, but the thing is, I always maintained my job and my marriage. So I was like, dude, I'm covered. I'm good. I'm a functional alcoholic. There is no such thing. So eventually I went home. My mom raised me by herself when I was a kid, you know, tough, you know, first few years until she got remarried. And my mom died, and it was very sudden. I was home visiting. She fell downstairs, and it was just really bad. And she was my best friend. And I found myself locked in a room for a month drinking. And my wife's like, do you want to live? She meant it. And everybody was giving me a pass. They kept saying, well, your mom died. I understand why you're drinking. And it hit me. I'm using my mother's death as an excuse to drink because I just want to drink. That's what I want to do. So I called a friend, ended up in LA at a rehab, bunch of 20 some years old kids on benzos and everything else. Here I am, a successful person with the stuff, and I'm on a little white bus every day going to meetings. I have a $20 per diem I'm allowed to have per day. And I hate it. Oh, I hated it. I was horrible probably the first half, and then it got that way. And I tell people when I go in meetings, and especially with sales meetings, and people are like, wow, you're really good with people. And I tell them, I start my day every day at 6:30 in an AA meeting with a bunch of misfits. Like my group's in Oakland. I still do Zoom with that group. And you name the kind of background, it's in that room. But we all have the same thing. We're all alcoholics. We all been, you know, we have this disease, which we didn't choose to have. And when you, you can find that commonality, then the other stuff doesn't matter as much. And I think that's the problem with most people. They don't look for the commonality. They look for the differences. You know, coming from a small town, I have to remind people all the time that, like, you have to understand that, like, where I grew up, we never heard the word Civil War. It was always the War of States' Rights or the War of Northern Aggression, believe it or not. It's actually on a statue in my town. So I'm like, you can't blame somebody for how they think like that if they've never left or had any other influence. But if you find a commonality, like if you go to my hometown, everybody's nicest people in the world, nicest people in the world. And once you find some commonality, then it's okay to understand, okay, this is where they're coming from. I don't come from there. Maybe I can help them get to a place where they understand, you know, maybe a little bit more than what they've been told. But you have to be, yeah, for me, I have to be honest and I have to be open and I have to, like, be there if somebody needs something. You know, that's part of the deal. You know, this is my trade. You know, this is what I get for sober life.
You know what, the commonality, and thank you for sharing that, because I've known several people that were alcoholics, and one of them was, I don't know what to say. You're not a functioning alcoholic, but it's just a term people use.
You think you
are. And he finally got, I'm sorry?
You think you are, because, you know, I got a job, I'm okay, my marriage is all right, you know, she doesn't like it when I go on a bender, but, you know, we sort it out. And when I got sober, went back to school, I got a graduate degree in digital marketing, I started my own company, I got made vice president of podcasting and IR radio, like, all of these things happened, and they would never have happened if I was drinking. I would have stayed in the same place, same job, I think that was another reason for me to get sober, because, like, I'm just not built that way. I'm always next thing, next thing, next thing. My old man has finally figured out I'm never going to have a job for 5 years or more, Dad. That's not what I do. That's just not how I operate. I got to do new things. But I was stagnant, and I didn't even know it until I got sober.
Well, when I traveled in different parts of the world, you were talking about commonality. We're all the same. I'm not talking about the people running stuff. I'm talking about us. Everybody just wants to, their family, wants to be left alone, have a nice, you know, friendships, have some money, have, you know, a house, you know, just common stuff, whatever that common stuff is. And you're right, because when you go to different cultures, and that's one of the things I loved, whether it's in the US or overseas, you go to the South, you go to the East, you go to the West Coast, there's all sorts of different things. And, you know, when you go to some of the Southern states, and I couldn't understand anything they were saying, and they didn't understand anything I was saying. But when you go to other countries, especially, you know, they have a different kind of breakfast. They have a different kind of lunch. They have a different, you know, one of my first trips to overseas was to Holland. And I have to admit, I was terrified. But I went, and it gave me a boost of confidence. And I was there for a couple weeks. And the Sunday that I was there, I went out and I go, I'll go to breakfast. All the shops are closed. Everything's closed on Sundays. They're going to church. They're spending time with their families. They're not doing anything. That's a day for family. And I kind of like, wow. It's very different, because here in the U.S., it's you get all your stuff done. You get all your stuff done. You got to run around. So the commonality is important. And the people that I know that had issues, one person finally got it handled, but it wasn't easy. It was not easy. And it's always there in your mind.
It's constant maintenance. And I tell folks, you know, if I don't go to AA, it's like if I had cancer and I don't go to chemo. I mean, I have to do that, or else, you know, because I've been in sobriety for 8 years. Have I been sober that entire 8 years? No, man. I had a couple relapses, and like most people, and they were the best thing to happen to me, because it got me to reevaluate this, reevaluate that. What am I not really doing in my program? What am I, you know, and that.
You've got that support network.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned Holland, because my senior year of high school, my exchange student, I used to have exchange students from Holland, and he expanded my mind. And I will say he was probably one of my biggest influences as far as going, wow, you know what? There's a lot of life outside of West Virginia that I don't know about and I find out about. And I had a boss, Katie Wilcox at iHeart in San Francisco, and I'm not the best communicator on emails. Sometimes I'm just very blunt, like, you know, just say it. And right. A lot of the salespeople didn't like me, my emails, and because I would be very mean sometimes about, like, why did you do this? And she said, listen, I want you to remember this. Every time you send an email, the person on the other side has a family that they love. They're doing the best they can, and they're not trying to hurt you. And I adopted a process that I still do now, is I will let myself write those emails, then I go take a walk, and I come back and read it out loud. And I hear myself, and I'm like, oh, you sound like an asshole. So then I rewrite it, you know? And I tell people all the time, like, it saved me so many just interactions that I didn't need to have negatively, you know, because I didn't go with my, you know, I wasn't lost in my feelings when.
Well, it's also helps you when you're communicating live, but it's also different when you're live, whether it's via this video, or something in person. You can see people's body reactions, their facial expressions, how they talk and you kind of adapt to them and they adapt to you. So it's all a learning experience. You know, we're great communicators, but there's certain ways. It's more important to tell somebody what they want to hear as opposed to what you think they're going to hear from your viewpoint. So it's just a different way of doing that. So I want to go to the next question because I know we're kind of limited and I just want to make sure I get as many as I can in here. I'm going to have you back another time. Tell me about your work with younger folks and how you make a difference. It sounds like, you know, with my company, it's about empowering others, empowers ourselves. When you give everything to people and you give things honestly and truly from your heart and your soul, you get 1,000 times back. So how is that working with you? Because I love that stuff.
And, you know, you've heard me already name drop 2 or 3 mentors. I am going on 50 and I still have mentors and I still find new ones all the time. I've got 2 new mentors now that are working with me on, you know, my career stuff and who are people I admired. And I find people I admire and then I'm like, teach me, tell me things. And whenever someone reaches out to me, I always respond. I always say hello. I think it's also endemic of the podcasting community. I think that's always been the way we are because we've had to work together because we're still not treated like other media. But when I started teaching, you know, then I really got, you know, students and then I'd hire them and I hire them all the time after they graduate and give them their first job and then send them off somewhere else. And that's turned into, you know, mentoring women at the ASA Collective. You know, I just did a 3-6-week thing for 70 women on podcasting. And I've been blessed to work with Second Chance Studios in New York, which is, you know, we help people who have been incarcerated, but have, you know, a lot of creativity and talent who want to get into media. And they get a 6-month fellowship to learn media. And I run the podcasting for that. And it gives back 100 times what I give. You know, I get back, you know, I remember my first sponsor. One day he thanked me. He said, thank you. And I'm like, what are you thanking me for? You saved my life. He's like, right. No, I know. But by doing that, you've helped me and helped me stay sober today. And that's how I look at everything. You know, that if I give a little bit, help somebody else out, that's I'm getting it back. I see it. I see it every day. And I'm thankful for it. Where probably 30-year-old Matt was not grateful for anything. You know, big shot radio guy. You know, right. I wasn't grateful for stuff. I didn't give up time to anybody. I didn't spend time helping people out. It wasn't that I was a bad guy then. It was just, I was into me.
Right. Right. I think it's important to understand that you get to a certain level and you need other people. And then you need other people. And it's a very rare thing that you completely do anything completely on your own, whether it's a wife, a girlfriend, boyfriend, a mastermind group that you joined, supporters, whether it's through AA or just in general in your life, family, friends, it goes on and on and on. And I think once you open yourself up to understanding collaboration and working together, and one of the things you talked about earlier, empathy, education, and entertainment, I mean, that's just in general dealing with people. You want to educate yourself and help the other person. You want to have empathy for both each other, and you want to entertain each other to tell stupid jokes sometimes. So it's something just making a difference and going back and forth. You already took it from me because I was one of the other questions I had was the Second Chance Studios, because that's very cool. I like that you're doing this. Do you think that if you didn't have these different issues, you know, with going through sobriety and everything, do you think you would have still gone that way with helping others?
No. Well, first I'd be dead. But
this is a good point. But if you didn't go through that, do you think that would have changed something?
Yeah. I mean, I tell people all the time, I'm a grateful alcoholic and people say that's weird. And I'm not here to like, you know, preach about 12 steps, but 12 steps are great for everybody. Like the only step about alcohol is the first one. The rest of them are about just being a better person and like seeing your faults and what you do to other people and how that affects them. And that is without having done that process and helped other people do that process, I wouldn't have that little pause all the time where I'm like, wait a minute, how is this affecting them? I need to go apologize for it. I need to make amends. I, you know, those are all things I never thought about. I never thought about making amends or You know, the only amends I made was like, sorry, I was so drunk the other night and pissed on your carpet.
Right,
and
that's not amends.
You know, on your wife or whatever.
Right.
You know, like, no. But that was just me trying to feel better and making sure everybody was okay. You know,
right.
I, you know, I want everybody to like me. Now it's different. It's and again, yeah, it would not be that way without having gone through what I've gone through.
Well, I think one of the things I always say is unforgiveness is much worse than forgiveness, because you got to forgive yourself for things that are going on. And if you start getting in touch with whatever that is, whether you call it God, whether you call it Krishna, it doesn't really matter what it is. There's like over 100 names to this all over the world. And you realize you're not the only one, and you've got some spiritual connection going on, and you've got some serendipities that are going on with people. And there's a reason why somebody says something. There's a reason for everything, why you wake up. Because when I wake up in the morning, before I even open my eyes, I said, thank you, God, I woke up this morning. And I do a lot of gratitude all day. I have a gratitude journal in the morning. I pray and meditate through this philosophy I've created, all these things making a difference. But this stuff takes time, and you have to learn yourself, and you have to be humble for it. And people feel that, and they see that, and they hear that. But it's a big deal to be able to just not just make a difference, but just people forget. And I'm not just talking about donating money, donating your time. You get so much in return, you have no idea. It's kind of like behind the scenes when suddenly you make a contact with somebody or you're talking to something. It's like, oh, I didn't think about that. Or, oh, you know, I really wanted to do that 10 years ago. I forgot about that. So it really comes back 1,000-fold.
And it's funny. I go to Episcopal. I go to a really liberal Episcopal church that is not Christian 100%. It's whoever. Come on in.
Okay.
Everybody's welcome.
Right.
And we have a couple of folks who were Jewish that come to church. It's really weird. But they were, you know, they're telling me about this, you know, this expression that, you know, when you pray for something and you don't do anything about it, though, that's a sin. And I'm still putting my mind around that sometimes, because I, you know, now I'm like, and we were happening to be talking about gun violence in church because we had lost some folks from a youth Episcopal church in Florida during the shootings there in the high school. And it hit me. It was like, man, I pray about this stuff all the time, but what do I do about it? And then, you know, I found websites that, you know, I can at least make donations and see if there's anything else I can do. And, you know, at least try to do something.
Right.
I look at my relationship with God is, you know, it's, you know, it's the whole, have you heard the little story, the guy's on his roof and there's a flood coming and the truck comes by and says,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, jump in the back, and then something else comes, and then finally, yeah, every time they come, he's like, don't worry, God will take care of me, and he drowns. He gets to heaven, and God's like, dude, I sent you everything.
Right.
Helicopter, sending all this stuff.
Yes.
And that's, you know, you got to look for it, though, and you got to be, you know, like, say, okay, well, this was brought to me for this, so maybe I should take advantage of it and help somebody.
And you do have to do something. I don't know if you ever seen the movie Bruce Almighty, but it's like, God, send me a sign. And the truck turns and says, stop, don't go there. And there's a couple more. And then, you know, everything goes from there. But yeah, there's all sorts of signs and serendipities and coincidences going on in our lives all the time. But if we're not at peace with ourselves, if we're into self-indulgence or abusive things for ourselves or just self-righteousness and ego, all the stuff that comes into the conscious mind. And if you're not in that imaginational mind of the subconscious, if you can't do that and you're not in touch with your ajnoy, as I call it, your soul knowledge and understanding your purpose in life and how you can find that and what you've gone through, there's a reason to something to get out of it, because you go, oh, why did I go through that? But if I didn't go through that, I wouldn't be who I am now. I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. You wouldn't be there talking to me.
My biggest failures are my greatest successes. I tell my students that all the time. You want to ask me about what, you know, where things, you know, I had like a career that was just boom, 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 boom. Everything was the next big thing. And then I had moved to LA to work with a director, and it was just a complete freaking disaster. And I got fired. I never been fired before. And it was just this thing. And it was also one of the things that really got me down the road of like headed towards, you know, bad being like truly an alcoholic. But man, if I hadn't gone through that, I wouldn't have there's just every other thing happened.
Right.
So I always tell people that, you know, the time somebody says no, that's something you really want, that's okay, because the thing you didn't know you wanted is probably around the corner.
Bingo.
But you got to wait for it. You got to be patient. It's just like this. Like, I'm a flawed human being. I have totally ego, self-indulgent, all the things but I'm trying. And that's
right.
All I can do. And I think a lot of people don't give themselves a break sometimes and go, you know what? Like, I have days where, like, I've been having a day today where it's just been like one thing after the other. And I just said, you know what? I'm going to cancel some stuff this afternoon because I need to. You know, I need to take this time to do something for myself.
Maddie, I've got to call it time because I'm keeping an eye on the clock. I definitely would like to talk to you further again for another interview. I got so many other questions on here I did not get to.
But sorry about the time. But thank you.
Real quickly, can you give me a very quick, because I strapped for time, but I want, can you leave me the audience with something positive, an aphorism, some positive note before we go, and I say one more thing. Can you think of something? Just something quick, something positive.
Give me a second. Something positive. So, yeah, when I was a kid, we were poor. And I remember one Christmas, our heat got shut off. And like, you know, my mom had grown up with money. So like, I'm in her college fur coat. Like, it's bad. And my mom looks at me and goes, don't forget the bad times because they'll make the good times that much better.
Wow.
That's why it's okay. This is good because when things are going good, they're going to be even better than they would have been before. And I always remind myself that I'm still that kid and everything I get is a little bit extra, you know, that I never thought I would have.
I like it. We'll end on that note. The only thing I will say, like I do on every podcast ending, I tell my audience, remember, it is more important to express your thinking thoughts and not the thoughts you are thinking. That is what is called conscious communication. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Conscious Communication. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can also get more great information at ConsciousCommunicationPodcast.com.